In this episode of After Hours, our head of strategy advisory, Kjell Herrenman, spent some time with the CEO of ClearBank, Charles McManus, who shares the story of ClearBank and what drives their ethos of being at the forefront of clearing and payments.
Hi, Charles. Thanks for joining us. So I'm joined today by Charles McManus, your CEO at ClearBank. Perhaps not all of our users or all of our audience might be familiar with ClearBank yet. So can you just tell us a little bit about what ClearBank does and what type of customers you serve?
Yep, absolutely. And delighted to be here, share our story and the excitement in relation to payments. So yes, very simplistically, you go back to 2016, the UK clearing and payments market, essentially 16 clearing banks consolidated back down to essentially the big four. Fintech revolution coming, all these exciting front-end apps, don't want to become direct members of the payment schemes, they've got to go to a clearing bank. So they then connect to legacy tech of the big four, as compared to our idea, which was an ISO 20022 API, Microsoft Azure cloud native tech stack, connect that tech stack to all the clearing schemes, put a payment to our API, we put it through the payment schemes, and we send you a message saying, done. As well as with all the virtual accounts to then give you auto reconciliation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so back in 2016, we managed to get the two billionaires to invest in us. And the strap line of ClearBank is the first new clearing bank in 250 years. It hadn't been done before for a while. And in fact, you couldn't become a member of a payment scheme unless you got a banking license. Well, we were applying for a banking license at the same time. So we had lots of whiteboard sessions with, I remember we had 26 different stakeholders in the room, from the Bank of England to the PSR to, at that stage, each of the payment schemes were separate companies. So in fact, RGTS hadn't separated into the Bank of England then. So anyway, we managed to do it. And if you then roll it forward, really the value prop was using that tech stack in relation to payments and clearing of agency banking, but innovation, and we'll go on to talk about embedded banking and what we do with embedded banking, and using our banking license to empower our fintechs and EMIs to behave like a bank, even though they're not one, in relation to financial services. So we've had a tremendous run. If you follow the story, we also, we enter the 5% club. I know this is payments, but essentially another stat for you we're quite proud of is only 5% of new banks ever make it to profitability around the world. So that being a, obviously in today's climate, very, very important. So we announced last October the UK bank had got to profitability. We also had a major private equity investor invest in this last February, Apax Digital. What's the number one thing that our customers actually want from us, apart from the operational resilience, the culture, the innovation, the tech, the no-nonsense service? Charles, it's only in sterling. I need it in euros. I need it in US dollars. I need it in other currencies. Where are you? And so the whole growth story now is actually taking it abroad. But we've had a fantastic run in terms of innovation and payments and clearing. And the unique aspect is, yes, we've got a banking license, but we hold all of our funds at the Bank of England 100% overnight. So we don't do any lending. We don't do all the normal things a bank does. We try and focus on being the best in clearing and payments.
Which is very interesting, because especially now with the rising interest rates, we see that net interest income is up across the board. So banks are making quite a bit of money off of that. And you're passing up on that opportunity, I guess, to generate some revenues. Why make that decision? Is that something that your customers are after?
Well, we wanted to be, if you like my history in investment banking and the rest, I used to say of my former banks, sort of when the corporate loan books used to move to the investment bank, what was the first thing that they do? Actually, they got rid of all the non-performing loans, looked at ROEs, actually looked at the total relationships with customers, and if they didn't do it, you know, the loans went back. And as I say, a former CEO and chair of the investment bank I used to work for, Charlie, the best loan we've got is the one that's not on our books. That may have coloured my view in relation to lots of people can do credit very well. ClearBank wants to be the best. If you're going to do something, it's like all of our ethos through life. It doesn't matter what it is, but you've got to try and do it well. We want to do clearing and payments well, and you can't do everything. We can't do retail banking, business banking, and all of it. The concept of a global customer service bank, you know, has gone. And so we want to empower our customers to then compete against each other, in whether it's lending or it's retail savings, retail bank, business, doesn't matter what it is, but we don't want to compete for their customers' customers. And so lots of those ethos. And of course, in relation to creating the resiliency of, and it's proved itself in terms of SVB, that in having all of the cash at the Bank of England, we can have a run on the bank and actually everyone's money is sitting there immediately. We don't have to liquidate anything in our balance sheet to create the liquidity that you actually need. Now, there's two things that kill banks. One, of course, is liquidity, which is from Northern Rock right the way through to SVB. Or it's actually credit losses, ultimately.
Yeah.
And so creating a different, more efficient reg cap bank and trying to be a bank that's valued like Worldpay was, or a transactional, rather than 0.6 of banking book or whatever. So that was another motivation in relation to the whole valuation of the company as well.
Oh, perfect. And, you know, that focus on that niche on payments, it really resonates with us. Obviously, we're a consulting firm specialized in payments and financial crime prevention. So really respect that. Now, when we're looking at the UK market specifically, what we see is that the Bank of England has opened up quite a bit to fintechs, EMIs and payment institutions that can have licenses directly and that can safeguard their funds at the Bank of England. They can be direct participants to the scheme. Something we don't have in Europe, or perhaps not yet, with a settlement finality directive. So how do you get into that market? What's kind of the value proposition for their customers? Why would they go through you rather than deciding to be a direct participant?
It's a great question. And I think as the world of payments has become more complex, as schemes essentially have the cost of compliance, the change in relation to sort of the upgrades you need to go through. So I think with something like faster payments or instant payments within the UK, it's a no-brainer in relation to that. But connecting to BACs or CHAPs are a whole different ballgame. Capital expenditure, cost, fixed cost. And really, in terms of expertise, does an EMI want all the hassle in relation to connecting to a payment scheme, or would it put that energy and investment into its customer front-end proposition? And going on from that, we've also gone on from clearing to embedded banking, as I mentioned earlier. So the likes of Tide, that's now got to, 9% of the SME market, has done that as an EMI, where we provided all the bank accounts through an embedded banking model. And so it allows Tide to behave like a bank and offer all the banking services without actually being one, but operates at the same regulatory standards. And we've then taken that model and hit other industry verticals, so retail savings now. CHIP, for example, offers one of the highest overnight interest savings accounts. Raisin, an investment manager, and that whole sector, looking to operate FSCS, retail savings accounts, at highest level of interest without having to get banking licenses.
Yeah.
And so the flight to quality in relation to the difference, people may not have heard of FSCS. When a bank goes down, all their deposits are at risk. Everyone wakes up to this £85,000 limit of, have I got my money with a bank or not a bank? And so that's driven, a lot of those EMIs, of course, can't offer that product set. You have to have a banking license. And of course, if you move into the digital asset space, and the way all the regulation is actually going, of course, what are the regulators doing? They're consolidating back into bank space and all the draft regulation in terms of to issue tokenized deposits or stable coins or whatever it is. Again, it's back to bank standard. And of course, the FCA as well, whilst the MIs are doing a great job, there's been lots of things that go wrong. So client monies, You look at Germany with Wirecard and Wirex. There's been numerous examples, and essentially, therefore, the regulators, again, weeding out the poor practices, the cowboys in that space, unfortunately, are hitting the good guys as well, raising standards, which has all been good for us. But there is this push, essentially, more to bank standard than EMI standard. Yep. So we've been able to compete on, if you like, the regulatory best, and those counterparties that want those, as compared to, I don't know, when we talk about Europe, a Lithuanian banking license, as compared to one of the big four banking licenses, the robustness of the supervision, etc. Who do they want to be associated with in terms of their counterparty and banker?
Well, it's interesting you should mention Lithuania, and I think that we discussed this a little bit before. But obviously, you're looking to expand in Europe, starting, I guess, with your UK customers that you're providing Euro capabilities for. When we're looking at Europe, we see that instant payments are starting to become the new normal. We see the European Commission pushing for that as well. We have the new legislation that's introduced. And the barrier to entry to do instant payments directly is very low, and especially if we're going through systems like Centrallink, who have an enormous market share. If we look at EMIs and payment institutions today, more than 80% of the volumes go through that Central Bank of Lithuania system, Centrallink. What can you offer that Centrallink can't? What's your value proposition there? And you could say maybe Sterling.
Well, actually, it is, in the end, it is the cross-border aspect. To the extent of trying to compete with any of the domestic players, you know, it's an absolute non-starter. But from the point of view of e-commerce, trade platforms, or movement of money across Europe to UK and indeed the US, is what we're actually very much looking at, as well as the embedded banking proposition that I talked about before, which not many European players are actually offering in terms of deposit protection. And you're absolutely right. In relation to SEPA credit payments, Europe is serviced very well. The margins are very thin. It's a high volume game. That's not where ClearBank is going to be able to compete and make money. But in the value add innovation space of either embedded banking or the connectivity in relation to our customers being able to move money between the UK, Europe and the US, on us transactions on our platform and with other members of our ecosystem, that's the value add. And that's the critical aspect in relation to the interconnectivity of our ecosystem that we're now starting to build.
And especially the US is very interesting. We see that especially embedded finance, embedded banking has really started to explode there. So you're also offering services to the US. Is that something that you currently do that's on the roadmap? Where do we stand there?
Not yet. I would love it to be the case, and that Europe is the priority. So we hope to announce our full banking license in the Netherlands soon, and then we'll be passporting into the big four within Europe. And we're working very hard with the DNB and ECB at the moment in relation to all of that. Once we have absolute confidence in relation to that, we will accelerate our US entry strategy, and we're already laying plans for that in terms of M&A activity and looking at various targets within the US. And again, timing is, if you like, is coming our way with SVB and the rest of the price of buying a US bank today is cheaper than it was. But we've still got to go through a proper regulatory conversion exercise in relation to acquiring a bank, converting the license to our model and actually using that. And of course, the Fed aren't particularly great fans of fintech banks per se and our model. However, again, SVB has actually opened up that whole debate of should the US have different bank business models. And the one that ClearBank has, should it have that as part of the landscape in relation to all of it? And it's opened up that whole debate. And particularly, if you get into the digital world, like Circle's USDC, and having to move all the cash that they move from SVB to Boney's sort of in days and fractional banking, it's opened up that whole debate again. Well, ClearBank, you know, if it issued a coin or a stable coin, it would be 100% cash backed at the Fed, ECB, and obviously the Bank of England. But you have to do an element of credit to get a US banking license, a European, and we're looking after that. But we are not getting into full-blown term lending and corporate credit. No, we're trying to meet the technicality of the license. But actually, there's strength in the model if you have all these different models to actually do it. And so we welcome, of course, all of that debate. But we want to get that US dollar, euro, sterling connectivity. And whilst we have various invitations to go to UAE and and other opportunistic jurisdictions, we're remaining very focused to execute in US and euro first.
Absolutely. So we've talked about domestic rails in UK, which are very much in place. In Europe, which are coming along quite nicely. And I do hope you get your banking license quite soon. And the US, obviously through M&A. But those are domestic rails. Are you also looking at international payments and supporting your clients with cross-border, with FX payments?
Yes, a real growth area. Not just on us, but and looking at other providers where we use some of the big US banks at the moment, as a number of other our competitors do. In relation to multi-currency FX, we'll be able to do more on us. But then there's the digital world as well. And everyone is in the race in relation to more efficient collateral and managing Herstatt risk in relation to cross-border settlement and clearing. I think it's really exciting space.
Yeah.
We've already done some tests in relation to in the digital world in relation to sort of settlement cross-border. There's so many projects going on and everyone talking about use cases. We all know the cross-border one is a massive use case if we could only really crack it properly.
And the margins in FX payments are still quite nice as well. So I guess the dream is kind of a bank where we can keep our ledger, where we can keep our deposits, where we have a single API, I assume, for all different types of payments. Now, that sounds certainly compelling for electronic money institutions, for payment institutions as well. But how about for small banks? Are there small banks for who this would potentially make sense?
Or is that's right. We've been very successful and opens up a different aspect because it comes back to McKinsey call it the IT cliff edge, whatever it is, in terms of the retooling that you've got to go through. And we partner with all the major tech companies in terms of the new tech. Mm-hmm. And we've been very successful with Mambu, for example, in relation to the new banks in the UK, where you come up with a new lending proposition as a new bank. Take Oxbury, for example, originally, or going back to Oak North. They want a loans deposits module as their core banking engine. You know, Mambu's been very strong in that. Well, it's already connected to ClearBank. You get Mambu, ClearBank, and off you go. You're all set as a brand new, off-the-shelf UK authorised institution. And we've won 8 of the last 9 new banks are all on that platform in terms of day one. And some of those, obviously, would become much larger players, etc. So, again, with partnering with all the tech firms, whether it's 10X, whether, you know, all of them, as well as the Mambus of this world, as not just brand new banks, but medium-sized banks on their own, and some of the larger building sites have all got to retool.
Yeah.
Then it opens up the opportunity to have a look at their payments and clearing provider and actually going for the best tech in relation to that to get the end-to-end customer experience that they're all trying to get to compete against the digital players.
And that's certainly what we see in Europe as well. Now with this instant payments legislation, we see that banks are going to shift volumes from traditional separate rails to instant. We see that they need to increase their capabilities in terms of volumes, need to upgrade their tech stack. So a lot of them are kind of starting back from zero, especially now everything is ISO 20022 based, right? We have this one beautiful canonical format, one data set that we can use for all our payment rails. So very excited to hear about all these advancements. I'm excited and welcome to Europe. It's a challenging market, and
it certainly is. And we have no ambition at all. We're coming to Europe and conquering. You know, that's the biggest mistake. The Brits have done it in the US, and there's been a graveyard in relation to that. So hopefully we'll know our place and we'll play our part, and hopefully a very profitable and valuable part in Europe. So thank you.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being on today. Thanks, Charles. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to After Hours by Red Compass Labs. If you've enjoyed this discussion and are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do follow us to be informed about new podcasts coming up. That's all for this episode. See you next time.